Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
What's up, everybody? This is Joe LaPuma. You are listening to the Complex Sneakers Podcast. I am with my full bearded friend, Matt Welty.
How you doing?
And of course, Brendan Dunn. What are you stretching over there? Getting ready?
Yeah, you know, got to get my calisthenics in. A little pre-workout workout.
Okay.
Joe.
Yo.
I need your help.
Okay.
You got to sort me out.
I'm here for you. Let me know.
Okay. Here's the thing. This past weekend.
Okay.
I tweeted about it. You might have seen the tweet, but I took a 2-hour walk to Bensonhurst.
Okay.
To get a sandwich. Leone's in Bensonhurst.
They used to have one in Albee Square that I used to get sandwiches from. It closed down though, but go ahead.
So you know.
Yep.
You know, quite a journey. I had the mask on, I had the gloves on, don't worry.
Mm-hmm.
They fucked my order up.
Okay.
They gave me the wrong sandwich. They didn't have any salad. I'm sorry to my girlfriend.
Okay. No offense to her. You don't go to Leone's for a salad.
I know. I was there for the sandwich.
Okay. Who was it named after? They had the Robert De Niro, they had the Al Pacino, they had the Joe Torre.
Joe, you got to order by number. And so I told them 11A. They gave me an 11. Totally different sandwich.
Okay, but who is 11A in Leone's? Let's look it up.
Look it up for me. But
what'd you end up getting that you're so frustrated about?
So obviously I'm a vegetarian. There was no... The sandwich I wanted to order had like fried eggplant on it. So something real substantive. Like this one was just like cheese and peppers and things like that.
Hold on.
Sounds amazing.
11, I don't see 11A, but the 11 is the Vince Lombardi. Roasted peppers, Leone fresh mozzarella, green pesto sauce, and a drizzle of olive oil and black pepper. Is that what you were going for?
No, that's what they gave me. Would you walk 2 hours for that? No offense to them, but I'm just...
Okay, but that is number 11.
I ordered 11A, Joe. Now, here's the thing. I thought I had some kind of clout. The Rich Antonello cosign doesn't work in Bensonhurst. The Premium Peak cosign doesn't work in Bensonhurst. The Joe LaPuma. What am I doing wrong?
Careful. Here's the thing, though. I know that you've been canoodling in the DMs with Queen. Queen, I put you on to Queen. Asking for merch.
No,
but listen. No. All kidding aside, when Queen opens, remember this.
A restaurant we both love independently of each other's.
Time out. How many times have you been there?
Not as many as you.
Wait, you've been to Queen before?
Yes, no. Joe, we talked about it. We talked about it. I haven't been there.
Okay, my bad. When that is open, we are having a feast at Queen.
Welty, are you coming? Because there's a lot of carbs.
No, I'll go just to one up. You think that that's bad. I'll one up you on that. I was on a press trip with Vans to Disneyland.
Okay.
In California. Mm-hmm. And I'm staying
a few years back.
Yeah, and I'm staying at...
Not last weekend like done, right?
No.
Okay.
I ended up walking like over like a mile and a quarter.
In the park?
Down like the side of like the walkway on like the highway or whatever, because I was just like, I have time to kill to go eat an Armenian restaurant in LA.
Of course.
And I get there and I didn't do my substantive Yelp research and the restaurant was out of business. So I think that's a little worse than going someplace and just getting the wrong sandwich.
That's painful.
The only thing I would say is you gotta kind of put an asterisk next to, he walked in the quarantine. So it's a little different than a press trip at Disney. I know it's still an unfortunate situation, but an all expense press trip versus him walking with his girlfriend, hey, trying to impress her. Hey, let's go to Leone's. Let's get some fine Italian cuisine. And then the order's wrong. So not apples to apples.
Did you get to skip the lines when you were there at Disneyland?
I don't think we ended up going on any rides, but the one thing I remember, I ended up going, this was 2015, I believe. I ended up going to, I was hanging out with the guys from Hypebeast and they're like, hey, do you want to come to a Post Malone show? Like, oh. I think it's like maybe 2014. Like,
right. Wait. This is as part of the press trip, or this is a separate?
No, this is just after the fact. I'm in LA, and this is like right when like White Iverson like first came out. Like,
that was your favorite song, right?
I like the song, but that's when the song first came out, and I'm like, oh shit, like I'll get to go see him live at some club in LA. I thought that was kind of dope because they shot things for Hype Tracks. So we had like VIP or whatever. We go
into,
like,
full Judas. So you not only went on you not only was chilling with the Hype Beast people, also Hype Tracks. So full Judas. Keep going.
Anyways, just kidding. Anyways, we go into like the VIP room, and I'm expecting like Post Malone to be this dude with, like, you know, braids and gold fronts and all that. And I'm looking around and I'm like, where the hell is this guy? I don't see him. And there's a guy sitting in the corner with a Bape hoodie pulled over his head, with like his head between his knees, like hiding from everyone, with his knees, like his foot tapping like crazy, like chain smoking cigarettes. He was like so afraid to perform, and then he goes on
shaky
stage.
Dog stuttering.
Yeah, he goes on stage and performs White Iverson like three times in a row because that's like all he had. And I go up on the stage and I'm like 5 feet away from him, trying to get a photo and send it to the complex, like social people.
There we go.
Send it to the complex social people, and his bodyguard is like right there, and he pushes me.
Oh no!
And this is the only time I've ever done this, and I was like, hey, yo, I work at Complex, bro. And he's like, and he goes, why didn't you tell me that? Why didn't you get closer? And he pushes me from the back and pushes
there
me
like
3 feet away from.
Talk about clout. Maybe
I,
not.
I want to do the research after this and find the exact show Welty's talking about to see him flanking Post Malone at some dingy LA venue. Welty, did he have the Bape hoodie like zipped up over the face? Was it one of those joints?
No, because he was smoking a cigarette. It was a full zip, but he like had his whole head covered so nobody would see him.
Needed some air for the smoke.
Joe, you probably got a bunch of those Bape hoodies in the closet, right?
Give me one sec. Let me see.
Joe is darting off to the closet to check. Welty, I don't know if you're the same as me in this, but by the time I could afford one of those Bape hoodies, they just weren't that cool anymore. So I wanted those full zip shark hoodies and all that camel stuff a lot. But
sorry, I don't have any here, but I have around four at my parents' house.
I think the biggest thing with those Bape hoodies was like way back in the day, like 05, 06, when you really wanted one, you were just so afraid that you were going to get a fake one. I remember like looking at those charts on the internet, and they're like, if the star is this far away from the baby Milo, it's real. And I'm like, I can't figure this out. I'm not even going to try.
Like the first camo all zip though is amazing. I still have it. I must have it since like 2010 or something.
Where did you get Bape back then, Joe?
I got Bape at Bape.
Yeah.
I couldn't really afford Bape hoodies until like Complex, honestly.
Yeah.
I remember going into Bape and being like, well, I'll never be able to afford like multiple t-shirts. Like you went in and it was like, I'll take one, you know?
Exactly.
Dude, like, it was mad expensive. I used to go in there and be like, oh man, this vest, like, you know, the camo vest, I always wanted that. I still may get that when we're out of quarantine if it comes back, but I just remember going in there and being like, oh man, I love this t-shirt. It was the like Cuddy era of Bape, you know,
when he was heavily, but you feel compelled to still buy something.
Yeah. And then I was like, man, how do people come in here and just cash out? Like, I could only get one thing. I had to like pick my purchases very carefully.
I had a similar feeling. Like, I think it was 2008. I was in the old Soul Box store in Berlin. I couldn't afford any of the BBC silk shirts they had or anything like that. But I was just like, I have to buy something. So I bought a pair of Nike SB pigeon socks. You guys remember when Nike SB was doing the socks with the colorways on them? You buy it and you think it's so cool and it comes in this cute little cardboard box.
Yeah, but then I remember
a couple years later, you're like, what the fuck am I ever going to do with this thing?
Yeah. I'm very excited. Lloyd Banks has been dropping music. Has anyone been listening?
No. No.
Why do you laugh, Welty?
I'm just not checking on it in 2020.
You respect Lloyd Banks, though, right?
It's one of those funny things because there's a lot of things that I like in life, too, that are probably like not as cool anymore. And then you'll be very upfront to tell me that those things aren't cool. And now you're getting hyped over Lloyd Banks in 2020.
Joe, is he referring to a text conversation we had earlier today?
I know what he's talking about. I don't want to get into it, but apples and oranges, no?
I don't think so.
Kind of. Welty is talking about a rapper that he loved back then that was maybe more prominent than he is now, but maybe not ever as prominent as Lloyd Banks.
I would say
he was never as big a name as Lloyd Banks, but that's a bigger discussion that we will dedicate a 3-hour podcast special to one day. Definitely DM Welty and ask him.
One thing probably do need to clarify, Brendan, is I posted that Instagram photo of me and you that like someone posted today, the picture of us in Malaysia. And I made a joke that like, oh, like the documentary is like coming soon. And like people genuinely think that the documentary is coming out. Wait,
Hold on. Was it really that crazy? Was it that crazy? Or
It was.
Like, really?
It wasn't like a press trip, though. It was like...
So here's the thing, Joe. You know when you go on one of those trips to the other side of the world and you're there for such a short amount of time that your sleep schedule never adjusts?
Yeah.
So we were there for like 3 days. So we were barely sleeping at all. And the guys at Sneaker Law, the show that brought us out there to shake hands, kiss babies, sign autographs, things like that, they were so accommodating. And so they were making sure we were going everywhere and eating all the best stuff. So it really was a good time. But I suspect nobody has yet written a treatment for a documentary around our 72-hour trip.
How was Mother's Day?
I don't know. It's just weird. Just weird with it because it's like... My family lives in New Hampshire, so, like, what am I going to do, you know?
Would you normally go up to New Hampshire for that, Welty?
I don't think so. Not that I don't want to see my family. It's just the Sunday holidays are hard to travel on.
Yes. Joe, you made the trip out to Long Island. Is that right?
Yeah, I surprised my mom after, like, 50 days of not seeing her or my dad. And, you know, she doesn't have FaceTime or Zoom. So,
oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, a little different. Like, do your parents have FaceTime or Zoom?
I bet my mom could figure Zoom out.
But so yeah, I popped up on them. It was really good. We did like social distancing in the backyard. I ordered Chinese food from my favorite Long River Chinese place in Long Island, and they delivered it. We ate it in the backyard. Went in the basement for a little bit with gloves and a mask on, and went through some crates.
Yeah.
Found some things.
You were digging through your old sneakers?
Yeah, like just I wanted to take a little bit of inventory, and I now know more than ever I need to like spend 2 hours there with someone and like really take inventory, because I was like, you know, you surprise yourself on so many old releases that you have, like pristine.
Did you bring anything back to Brooklyn with you?
No, and Jose, the director of sneaker shopping, Jose Melendez, was like, dude, bring them back for the content. And I was like, a lot of them are dusty. I can't bring them back. I have no room in my apartment. You know, I found the Purple Avengers.
Good shoe.
Zoo York Blazers, the Bacons we know we talked about, but Lance Mountain, Jordan 1s.
Mm-hmm.
SBs.
Did you get a bunch of annoying messages? Because anytime I post a view of all the shoes I have stacked up or sitting in my house, a million people DM me being like, are you selling something? Are you selling? Don't DM me with stuff like that.
I didn't post it. I just put it in our Slack. I saw the promo pairs of the Jordan 1 mids with the MJ engraved from the Chicago press trip in 2008. And then I showed you guys these, right? The MJ photos that I took at Michael Jordan's steakhouse.
Yeah. Did you bring a disposable camera?
I know, right? How bad was it? It must have been like the first digital camera ever.
You had to upload the photos onto the laptop.
He went to Kinko's to print those out.
It was bad.
Oh, one thing that people were talking about, the story I wrote about the 7-Eleven dunks yesterday.
Oh, right.
Not being...
What were they saying?
What's the story, Welty? What's the story?
Some people were saying to me, you don't know how much slushies did for the culture or something like that. Like,
that's funny. That was obviously a joke, but that's really funny.
People were serious.
The story here is Welty slamming the Nike SB X 7-Eleven dunk, a shoe that I don't particularly appreciate either. I think you had some good takes on it, Welty, so I always applaud you for putting your strong opinions out there.
In Nike SB, the account replied to it, hit me with the TLDR.
Sunday morning, it's Mother's Day. Everyone's posting like pictures of their mom and happy Mother's Day to all the mothers there. Welty posts like, remember when sneaker culture wasn't corny with 37 iterations of the Jordan 1? Welty, I almost replied, hey man, it's Mother's Day. It was like at 10 a.m.
Woke up fired up, I guess. Sometimes you got to get the takes off while they're on your mind.
No matter what holiday, right?
After 45 minutes on the Bulgarian body bag.
Guys, let's move on. We could spend hours talking amongst ourselves, but we actually do have a really good guest ahead of us. In 2003, a brand was formed under the vision to merge skating, surfing, punk, hip-hop, and overall street culture into one. It's a challenge that in 2020, especially with the current climate, would sound like a near impossible task. But Cali-based streetwear pioneers, The Hundreds, did it. The Hundreds brand has adapted, shifted, and maintained substantial staying power through their own flagship collections, a wide range of collaborations, and even a website where you get brain food in between product drops. Oh, and if you want even more brain food, his book, This Is Not a T-Shirt, should be on your quarantine reading list. We're proud to have the co-founder of The Hundreds, Bobby Hundreds, on the podcast. Welcome, Bobby.
Hey.
There he is.
Thanks for having me.
How you doing, bro?
I'm good. I'm just... You know, man, like highs and lows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Weird days. Like, I just feel completely out of control of, I guess, like my mental states on most days. Like some days I wake up and I'm on top of the world. Mm-hmm. And then the next morning I wake up and I'm just immobilized. Like, yeah. I just can't even get out of bed. And I'm like, what is that? It's so weird. But yeah, I don't know. Like, every week is different. Every day is different. Every hour is different. And just.
But also, they're all the same.
Yeah. I was just saying yesterday that, like, Mondays are really hard. I can't get motivated at all to do anything. And I was asking my staff about it in our morning meeting. I was like, why is it so hard on Mondays? And they were like, because we don't have weekends anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, every day, it's just been 8 weeks.
I know.
Same day. Like, it's just a looping week. We used to have a break somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's just every day is the same thing. And so we're like, it's so tiring to wake up on a Monday and be like, oh, right, now I'm doing the same thing again. It's just, there's no break.
The last time I talked to you, you took me and Noah Callahan Bever, former Complex CCO, to the Serving Spoon.
That's right.
Los Angeles. What a breakfast. It was the day after Complex Con.
It was. And all my friends who live down there were like, what are you doing in my neighborhood? Don't you ever come back down here again?
That place was amazing. So good.
It was so good. Highly recommend.
We talked a little bit about how you're doing, you know, during this crazy time. And we talked about you personally. How's, like, the company and what's been different and how are you guys staying kind of, like, creative and checking in with each other during the pandemic?
Yeah. I feel like a lot of DTC e-com brands can maybe share the same sentiment right now. You're either maintaining or you're actually doing better than ever. Mm-hmm. And for many of our peers, they're doing better than ever. It's the nature of the type of clothes we make, but it's also just, we're just good online. We have thriving communities. We have really loyal communities and customers in our marketplace. And so every brand has an allegiance. Also, I feel like we sell to a younger crowd who has a different perspective on coronavirus and COVID, as opposed to someone who's my age, who has kids, as versus someone who's like my parents' age. So younger people are very aware of it, obviously. They may not feel as threatened physically, even though they can get sick, as we all know. And even if their parents may get it, like, they're also not that worried about their parents, because I'm worried if my parents get it, because they're mm-hmm. in their 70s and 80s. Like, a young person, like a kid who's like 17, is just like, even my parents get it, they might not die. So I think as far as, like, health ramifications go, they're feeling pretty good as far as, even if they're on an unemployment. As we all know right now, with unemployment, people are getting caked off better than if they even had a job.
Yeah.
And so there's just, like, a lot of money floating around and people are stuck at home. Our customers are stuck at home and they need something to do. And instead of spending all their money going to Coachella or going out and partying and getting drinks or whatever, they're spending it on clothes and brands.
I guess it makes sense, like, the Hundreds had a blog from the very beginning, right? So the idea that you were always online, you didn't necessarily have to transfer an audience or anything like that.
Yeah, a lot of our peers have been coming to us just asking advice, like how they always have anytime there's some type of digital transition, just because it's always been native to us and native in the way that we speak to our audience, the way that we built our brand through the blog and then 10 years later social and the way that I use Snapchat at that time. And so we're always trying to figure out the best way to communicate with our audience. And whenever something changes, I mean, especially this fast, you know, the first thing we did was, like, what tools are open for us? What vehicles of communication? And so, obviously, Twitter, Instagram, like, all the social channels. But I use an app called Community. It's in beta right now, so it's not widely available. But it's really just, like, texting. I'm literally texting thousands of people a day. And then I'm also using TikTok to show process videos. I'm not doing any dances or anything.
No Tootsie Slide?
No, not. And then we also just launched the Hundreds TV, which is basically just building and streaming casts through our website where you can.
I hope it goes better than Quibi.
Quibi. Ooh. Yesterday was the big article about how it's been off to a slow, disappointing start, kind of.
Yeah. You know, we met with Quibi. We were one of the first to meet with Quibi, I think almost 2 years ago, when it was, like, literally Katzenberg, Meg Whitman, mm-hmm. and three other people from Snapchat. And they brought us in and I was pitching them a bunch of stuff. And one of them was the streetwear doc that never happened. And they were just honestly not interested enough in it. They just didn't care. And now I feel like, you know, I saw a quote by Katzenberg this morning. He's just like, oh, I'm blaming everything on the coronavirus.
Yeah, yep.
I was like, well, maybe you're just making content that really is not what we want right now.
Right.
Like, I don't, you know, celebrity driven stuff, like, honestly, I just don't really care.
Totally.
And I think, you know, Streetwear Doc would have probably been the biggest thing on that platform today, but you know, that's just me. That's my bias.
Yeah, but it'd be a 10-minute streetwear doc. Who really wants to watch that? You know what I mean?
That's about all there is to say, really.
So. Bobby, one other thing you guys are working on right now is the Puma project. Can we talk about the Puma sneakers you're releasing?
Yeah. So this is the first of a couple collections that are dropping this year. It's all themed around high school cliques. Puma came to us about a year and a half ago, and they said, we want not just to do one shoe with you, but tell an entire story. And that was enticing to me because usually when we do sneaker projects, it's a one-off, and they were like, we want to do full collections. We want to tell a narrative. And so I themed it all around 90s high school cliques. And so there's like a raver, and there's like a jock and a prep. And there's like this underlying social commentary just about how back then people were identified by their uniforms, and they kind of all listened to the same music if you're a part of the same tribe. And kids today are more inclusive and all-encompassing and open-minded, and you can't tell what and who a kid is by the way they dress anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, any kid can wear Supreme. Like, he can be a gangbanger, he could be a stoner, he could be a theater nerd, all these things. And so I just think that's like a pretty cool departure, like change over the last couple generations from the way that we grew up, and everyone had to think a certain way. And now, like, you can be whatever you want, you can dress however you want. So that's really the message of that collaboration.
And the Pumas are out now?
They're out. Yeah, we dropped them first through our site. Our audience is very loyal, so it blew out right away. And then
that's awesome.
Through Puma.com, it dropped, I think, this week. And I don't know what their numbers are looking like, but if you just judge by their social engagement, like, all of our stuff, it's, you know, for months, it's just like the most liked and most commented stuff on there. So I think it's good. You know, like, I'm really stoked on how it all turned out for us.
Do you think people care, like, more just about, like, getting something from the hundreds than the brand you collaborate with? Or do you have to, like, do you have to pick, you know, which brand you want to work with?
Yeah, that's so funny. Because of the pandemic, because of the circumstances, because there's nowhere to buy our stuff wholesale right now, there's more people coming online. There's a lot of reasons why our online business is exploding. And everything we're doing is selling out. It typically sells out, but the way that it's selling out now, it's happening within minutes. So we released a shirt the other night with our friend Liz Beecroft, who did the In My Feels Nike last year. And that shirt sold out in, I think, 17 minutes.
Wow.
And we'd allotted enough. And that was for charity. We had allotted enough for like 24 hours, and it sold out in 24 minutes. And so when people, the staff has been asking this a lot. They're like, wow, like, people really love Animaniacs. Like, that was a really good collaboration. Or people really love Puma. And one of my rebuttals is, yeah, but also people really love the hundreds.
Yes.
Like, I think they're buying it just because they want to support. It feels comfortable, familiar to them. And there is also like a nostalgic, sentimental quality around our brand, which in a time like this, when everything feels so uncertain and everyone is nervous and anxious, for me especially, like, I'm reverting back to things that feel comfortable and trustworthy and that I grew up with. Like, I'm listening to old music again. Like, I just want things to go back to how they were. And I think that might manifest in the way that brands and designers design and what's going to resonate with people in the future. So when we do a project with Animaniacs, the reception to that, people were like, oh my God, when I was a kid. And that emotionality around that project really made it sing. And so I think the same thing is happening with the hundreds. People that are coming back around now, like, we have our, every generation, we have that 14-year-old, 15-year-old kid. Like, there's always another seventh grader who's learning about streetwear for the first time. They find out about it through the hundreds. But now we're seeing this influx of 30-year-olds, 40-year-olds, like, the guys and girls who are my age, coming back around going like, man, I just needed a hoodie. I'm home all day. I'm not wearing a suit to work anymore. I went back to you. And so we're getting, like, both of these energies coming in at the same time. It's pretty cool.
Do you feel nostalgic even just not being able to go to your physical store? You know, like, how much do you miss those Fairfax days?
Oh my God, so much. I mean, are you guys getting more nostalgic just in general? Are you getting just sentimental about life?
I think so.
Yeah, it sounds weird. I've mentioned it on the podcast, but like watching the Jordan doc and then like going into my closet and looking at Jordans, like, I'm sure Wealthy has called it out on Twitter and stuff, but like, I'm not hiding that. Like, there is a feeling, like, I was telling them on Mother's Day, I popped up on my mom and went into my parents' basement and was like pulling out sneakers and stuff because we took all kind of like this stuff for granted that was such an everyday occurrence. And I can't imagine like not hanging out on Fairfax. You know, when we're shooting at Flight Club sneaker shopping, I pass the store all the time. I go in that alleyway to get through the store and I still see the crowd there. So
yeah, we put a billboard up. We have a billboard on top of our building on Fairfax. We've had it forever. And so this month they were like, oh, we have to promote. We have our summer collection. We have this Puma project where we're going to put up. And I just said, I just want to write, "We miss you."
Like just, oh, nice.
So I just like designed this black billboard with white Frizz Quadrata font, and I just said, "We miss you," and that was enough. And everyone's been posting it because they're like, "Yeah, dude, like the street feels weird. Like,
yeah,
life feels very strange right now without us all convening." And so, yeah, I don't know. I feel more sentimental, and I think that's gonna be more and more the case around brands that people really grew up and loved. You know,
take us back, Bobby. I want to know about those days when the Fairfax store was where all the rappers were coming to shop, where everybody was kind of converging.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, there was like a mix of high profile clientele and celebrities. Like at that time, like the mainstream rappers like Ludacris and Nas and Chris Brown and Rihanna came like two nights or the night before their incident.
Wow.
And they were shopping for like outfits for that awards show or the after parties, whatnot. Like that was that period of time. But then you also had this next generation of kids that everyone knew there was like an energy around them. Like, we knew that Tyler was going to be a thing. We knew that these OF kids, Nakel, like we knew all the Fairfax guys were going to be a thing, but they were so young. They're like 14, 15 years old hanging out. And I was just like, what is this? And they were watching us, young entrepreneurs, like 25-year-old guys running around making all this money. They're like, we can do that. We want to be that. We can be better than that. And they were, and they did. And so I don't know. I don't know how you ever replicate something like that. You know, in every generation, in every geographical context in London, whether it was around like Malcolm McLaren and what that whole scene was, and Tokyo with Harajuku, like everyone has a thing. Even in LA, whether it was like the Sunset Strip in the 80s and different cultures colliding and just kids coming together, like that was our thing in Fairfax. There should be a movie about it one day, you know?
Was there one person from those days who was hanging around the store that may not have been a star that you guys pinpointed like this guy's going to be big one day or had like the charisma that no one saw yet, like who was really kind of standing out amongst those groups of people that were hanging out near the store?
I mean, I'd be lying if I said that we thought any of those kids could actually be a superstar. Like that blew us all away. We all knew there was a charisma and an energy around these people. But again, streetwear was so counted out and excluded from the mainstream conversation. None of us thought we were going to actually make it to this level. I didn't think I would still be doing this. I turned 40 this year. Wow. I didn't think I'd be doing this, let alone be having the best week of the best month of the best year of our careers, like over the last couple of weeks. Like that was never supposed to happen. So our eyes were watching certain kids out there and we were looking at certain designers and brands and going like, oh, they're going to be big. But within the sense, within the language of streetwear and street culture, I thought they were going to be big. I just thought that was it. That was like you're going to be big on Fairfax and that's it. Like no one's going to know you beyond that. Even when I remember when Earl dropped that video, right?
Yeah.
That was the first big splash. And everyone in Los Angeles, the entire music industry, everyone in fashion, all the skaters were passing around that video in the same afternoon going like, what is this? And I was like, oh, these are the kids. They, you know, some of them work at the Jive store. That's so-and-so. And everyone's like, there's something here. And even then, we were like, this is going to be big, but it's going to be like, it can be like Krayshawn or like Be Nasty. You know, it's going to just be a thing within our world. Like, that's about as big as it gets.
It's like when you did the Brown Babies collection, basically, yes, right?
Yeah. I saw so many iterations of what that could be. Like, if Brown Babies happened around that time or if it happened today, it would be the biggest thing ever. It was big for us. Even at the time, it got so big that we had to stop doing it. But for those who don't know, early on in the brand, we, like really within the first 2 years of the brand, we were hanging out a lot with these girls that were called the Brown Babies. And there was like a Mexican girl, a Salvadorian girl, Guatemalan, a Cuban girl, half Asian girls, Filipinos. And they were just all like claiming the fact that they were brown and proud of being brown. And they were cute. And they had like big hoop earrings and tattoos. And they were getting fights and would go out into the nightlife scene in Hollywood. And everyone was like, dude, who are these girls? I started building a brand around them with Ben. It was called Just Brown Babies. And those shirts just started flying. And I was like, this should be a reality show.
I never knew about this. When was this?
This was 2005, 2006.
Okay.
And it was big. I'm telling you, it got huge like within weeks. And I was like, okay, there's going to be MTV reality show. At the time, MTV reality shows were a thing. I was like, there's going to be animated series. This is the new Bratz dolls. We can merchandise the fuck out of this. This is going to be huge. And it just got so big so fast that those girls internally started having factions. And like their egos were growing. They're like, I'm going to move to New York. And like, fuck you. And blah, blah, blah. And then Ben and I, one night, I remember it was like 3 a.m. and I was sitting there with like 6 of these girls. And they're telling me like how to design a shirt. And I walked outside and I called Ben and I was just like, I can't do this anymore. This is just not, I'm pulling the plug. And the hundreds wasn't even a thing yet. Like there wasn't even like a, it wasn't promising at all. It was just like a fun project.
It wasn't huge?
And it wasn't huge. And Ben was like, dude, let's just focus on the hundreds right now. Thank God we did.
Can you tell that Nas story? I know you mentioned Nas being in there. I think this was in your book too. It was like right around the time that Kingdom Come maybe came out, Jay-Z's record.
Was Kingdom Come when he was coming out of retirement?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Nas walked in to the store. He would come in every now and then. And Morgan, who's one of our old shop guys, was playing the album. He had found a copy somewhere, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he just downloaded it. And it wasn't out yet. And Nas walked in and was shopping and then realized what was going on. And he just stopped and he's like, is this the new Jay? And Morgan's like, yeah. And he's just like, huh. And he just sat, he stood, our store was really small. It was 400 square feet at the time. And he just dropped his bags and he just stood there and he listened to, I don't remember if it was the entire album, but at least like a few tracks. Like he just was like, just keep it going, keep it going. And he just sat there and listened to the rest of it. And then he just picked up and he's like, hmm. And he basically said like, not bad. And he just kind of gave a shrug. And we were like, this is insane. Cause that was right off the heels of them having their
Static.
Crazy,
yeah.
Static and Beef. Mm-hmm. And so it was his first time hearing what Jay was doing. And it was only like a couple of us in the store. Morgan's in there. I was sitting there like just watching. And I was like, is this really happening?
Were you guys nervous? Was it like, no, we need to turn this Jay-Z off?
No, we were just, I think we were just stunned. Like nobody move. You know, like maybe if we don't move, he won't see us kind of thing. Like I just didn't want to disrupt the moment. I didn't want it to end. Like, I didn't want to be like, oh, can I help you with something? Or, oh, what do you think? Like, I didn't want him to get all self-conscious. Like, he was completely oblivious to everything else that was happening. He's just like, he walked in and it's basically like he ran into Jay and was just like, all right, I'm going to see what this is all about. And he didn't care about anything else that was going on. And then I took a photo of him right there.
You had like the photo booth in there, right? Do you still have it?
No.
You don't? I remember when Cudi was on his first cover of Complex, he had around 7 or 8. He went in there with Ivan Jasper and he took a photo in the photo booth with the cover. And Cudi's been in there a bunch of times, but that time stuck out. I think you blogged it. And then in 2012, didn't he like buy out the store or something?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. Cudi's always been a really good friend of the brands, especially in the early days. And he was really proud of that cover. He also, there's like, he took a photo with the cover and he also, because on the inside of it, there was a G-Shock ad with me and Ben.
Oh.
The full page spread. And so he was basically saying like, look, I made it, you guys made it, and like, we're here.
That's awesome.
And he's far surpassed me since then. But at that time, we were both on the same level almost.
Remember that.
And then, yes, around 2012, he came in. I wasn't there that day, but he put his card down and he was just like, I'm buying everything for everybody in store. Get whatever you want. He spent thousands of dollars. And a lot of people were like, wow, that's so kind and generous of him. And I was just like, dude, that's just what that guy does. That's not out of the ordinary at all.
Totally.
Who's the most surprising person that like came into the store that you kind of shocked you? Like if Christopher Walken like walked into the store or something like that.
Dustin Hoffman used to come into this store.
Ooh, good one.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus used to come in and I used to have these really cool conversations. There was a shirt, there was a series of shirts I made. That sometimes I just do vanity designs that nobody cares about. Ben thinks are horrible. Everyone makes fun of me for. They were college shirts where it said Stanford, Harvard, Princeton, but they were misspelled. Like it said like Stanford with a U. And I was just like, this is hilarious. I'm just going to put a few of them in there. And Julia Louis-Dreyfus came in and she was just like, these are genius. And I was like, thank you. Can you please tell that guy over there? And Ben was standing there. He's just like, these are trash. Garbage ideas, like cornball.
Was Dustin Hoffman writing for those ones too? Maybe a little bit of graduate appreciation.
I forget. He came in with his son, but he was super stoked. A kid messaged me yesterday. Okay, so while we've been sentimental, at the same time, my customers have been very sentimental, and especially those who have been texting me. And so people have just been telling me these crazy old Rosewood stories. And one of the kids yesterday, he's not a kid anymore, he's a grown up, but he said that he was shopping his first time. He flew out to LA. He lived somewhere else, went to our store. You know, he couldn't believe he's in a store. He's walking out and Michelle Pfeiffer was walking in. And he was like, okay, this is like the most LA moment. So I feel like everyone at some point in LA at that time walked in or was aware of the store.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
I've been feeling nostalgic too. I got to tell you guys, before this episode, I was looking back. So I've had my Gmail account, my personal Gmail, since like 2005 or whenever it was in beta or something like that. So anytime I want to go and think about things I bought from 15 years ago, I go in there and I was searching the hundreds and finding all these items I bought from the website or from like Digital Gravel in like 2007, 2008.
Wow, Digital Gravel.
Wow. Oh my God, the Krylon shirt.
Oh my God.
The chalk pullover sweatshirt in a blue Broadway denim that I turned into cutoffs my first year of college. Oh my God. Neon Atom Bomb logo gray t-shirt with the gray 100 sneakers to match, man.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Bringing it back to Puma, Bobby, you and I talked about this, I think it was at ComplexCon like the night before. And, you know, Nipsey Hussle, you spent time with him before his unfortunate passing. And there's a photo that you posted on your Instagram that you took, I think, from the passenger seat that he was driving, right?
Yeah. There's a mural of that up in, I think it's in Brooklyn.
It is. You know what, Bobby? I passed it in a car like a month or two ago, and I almost took a photo and sent it to you. You don't really answer my DMs anymore, but maybe I'll have to text you on the app thing. But there is a mural of it in Bushwick.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's right. It's in Bushwick.
He was working with Puma. Did you guys ever talk about his ventures and things like that?
No, not on the Puma tip, because mm-hmm. Our relationship with Puma hadn't started even.
Got it.
Actually, right around the time he passed is when we started talking to Puma and building that relationship. A large part of that segue into us talking to Puma was because of the Nipsey thing.
Okay.
I was super appreciative of how they treated him and worked with him like over the years, and especially after his death, like how they just continued to promote and support him like in a really tasteful way. But from my perspective, it always looked like Puma was doing Nipsey's name right. And, you know, look, like, let's be honest, a lot of people didn't care as much about Nipsey before his death as they mm-hmm. did afterwards. There's a contingent of people who just didn't appreciate him as much. But Puma always knew, like, they were following him forever, supporting him forever, mm-hmm. had an appreciation. So just the fact that they were there for him when he was alive and when everyone here in the community knew, like, this guy was going to be a celebrated musician, like, I was just like, that's cool. Like, I can respect that.
Did you ever like give him advice on the Marathon Continues brand? Did you guys ever talk about that?
Yeah.
What was that conversation like?
We've shared a lot of the same. If anything, I think he was giving me advice. Like, he would come to us for production advice, just like general business related things. But the dude was vastly intelligent, was more equipped as far as, you know, his business shrewdness and capabilities than we were. Like, he was just so much smarter. He was listening to all the craziest things. He was constantly listening to podcasts, reading, and like teaching me a lot of this stuff. And we shared a lot of the same philosophies around the idea of the marathon, about how this isn't a race, about how this is for the long haul. And, you know, it's such a contrast to how younger designers and brands build today. A lot of people are just really in it to, you know, get valued at a certain amount, flip the company 2-3 years in, do something else, and just kind of jump around. That's largely like how a lot of kids operate their brands and their art now. It's just like, I want to do a little bit of everything and bounce around. And he was like, I'm going to stay committed, focus on this one thing. It's really about longevity. I want to be around in 100 years. And we were always the same way. We were like, yeah, we want this to be like Levi's. We want to be like Nike. Like, I want our great grandchildren running this company. And he was the same. So I can't really say like I mentored that guy. I didn't teach him anything. Like, really, I felt like I learned more than anything.
Were you surprised at how much the brand kind of resonated with rappers and those people were trying to connect with you? I mean, you mentioned it recently about Travis Scott having the Atom Bomb, the Hundreds logo tattooed on his arm. Sorry, the old logo, the wildfire flag. And then YG also has the Atom Bomb tattooed on him, right?
Yeah, yeah. That the Atom Bomb cartoon mascot is kind of like a hood badge in a way. Whenever I bring it up, everyone's just like, dude, everyone who grew up in that time, if you were from the hood, if you were trying to rep, you know, you got that as almost like a badge of honor. And kids are still continuing that today in their own way. But at that time, it really meant something like in that sense. It's cool. I mean, it blows me away. You know, my kids were, I have a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old, and when we were playing Fortnite and I was like, I want to go to the concert, and we were watching the Travis Scott thing, and I was just like, look at his arm, look at his arm. And they were like, what is that? And I'm like, look at his arm, look at the inside of his arm. And they're like, why is Atom Bomb on there? And I was like, because he likes Atom Bomb. And they're like,
that's awesome.
Why would he ever get a tattoo of the Hundreds? And I'm like, because, idiot, at some point it really meant something to this guy.
Because we're like, very cool.
Yeah, I was just like, because I'm cool. And they're like, no. I feel bad for Travis, because in that moment he lost a little bit of credibility with my kids, because they're just like, okay, he can't be that cool. Like, he has daddy's logo tattooed on him. This is not that tight.
How do you feel when you see someone like Travis like wearing SBs and stuff in this era? Something from, you know, your era.
I think it's fun. I like it. You guys know better than I do. Has the whole Dunk resurgence SB thing, is it gaining traction? It's
exploded.
I just didn't, like, I've been stuck in this room for the last few months. I just don't really know. But I'm, like, freaking out. I want to buy everything, you know? Like, so the next three that are dropping, I need to get all three of them.
You've taken a break kind of from that, but why has that shifted?
I don't know. I have no idea. I think I'm just in this season of my life where I really just don't care. Like, I just don't take anything seriously at all anymore. And I just really want to have fun. And for the longest period of time, like within my career, there's so many eyes on me and there was so much like, what is he wearing? What's a lot of pressure to behave or look a certain way or, you know, live up to an ideal or to be the guy. And so I was just agnostic with everything. Like, I wear Chucks and that's it. And I don't care about sneakers. And, you know, it just wasn't fun to me. Mm-hmm. And there is now this element of fun again around a lot of that stuff. I don't know. Maybe it is just I'm feeling nostalgic. Maybe I'm having a midlife crisis. I don't know.
Are you going back and buying old sneakers that you always wanted? Stuff like the Reese Forbes Dunks?
I would. I mean, they're still so expensive for me. I make more money now, but in my brain, I'm still 20 years old and I have no money all the time when I look at sneakers. So I'm like, dude, those are $600. Like, that's a lot. Like, I'm sorry. That's still a lot for anybody. And I just can't bring myself to buy stuff like that.
Is that crazy to you? Like, you know, you see someone like Kylie Jenner wearing like the Stussy Dunks and a pair of those sold on StockX for $10,000, which she may or may not have purchased. Like, does that like blow your mind that like that street culture that you were part of back in the day has now become like Kardashian fashion or like?
That's such a leading question, Welty.
Oh, you know,
Welty loves this
topic. He just
said
that SB has become Kardashian fashion, which isn't correct, but.
Okay. I mean, it has. She's.
We have a 10-minute segment devoted to this every week, Bobby.
I mean,
yeah, I'll be honest. The Kardashian Kanye stuff. I don't know anything about it. I don't follow any of those people. I mute everything that comes from accounts like that. Like, I just don't know. I have no idea what's going on with them. And that's just a personal thing. It's nothing against, I don't know those people, you know? So it's too much for me at a certain point in my life. And I was like, I'm better if I just don't listen to a lot of it.
How much sneaker stuff are you paying attention to in 2020? Obviously, you're working with Puma, but outside of that, like,
yeah.
Do you watch what comes out every weekend? Do you get excited about sneakers still?
I still get excited about certain sneakers, but really specific ones like the Dunks, you know? Mm-hmm. But a lot of like whatever's cool in the moment, I don't really know. I don't really care too much about. I was asking Liz Beecroft, we had an interview yesterday, and, you know, she's very up on her sneakers. And I was asking her, I was like, where do you get all your information? She's just like, oh, I'm on this app and I have this. And I was just like, I don't have any of that stuff. Usually by the time I find out about a shoe, it's way too late. Like, it's already been out for 3 weeks. You know, it's everyone's just like, dude, those dropped like 3 weeks ago and they're $1,000 on StockX. And I'm like, oh, well, those are cool. And it just kind of, that's the nature of how this goes now. You just can close your eyes for a week and open them, and then there's like five other new shoes that you need to buy. So I don't feel too bad about missing stuff anymore.
You said that the Jordan 4 is your favorite Jordan. Have you been watching the documentary, The Last Dance?
Okay, I haven't.
Okay,
wow. And not because, and it's taken an incredible amount of discipline to not watch it. And Sunday What's nights are here? A living hell for me.
Okay, yeah, I want to know why you haven't. So that you have to have a good excuse.
It's not the best excuse.
Okay.
Number one, I want them all to drop together and I want to just dust through them.
Okay.
Like, that's a thing for me. I don't want to wait a week. And then like secondarily, I'm just stuck on these. I'm not a good TV watcher. I really am not. Like, I have to force myself to commit to series. I've never watched Game of Thrones, never watched Sopranos. Like, this is where you boot me off. I've never watched Breaking Bad. The Wire, I've watched only season one. Like, who stops? Like,
like crazy. Don't like, hasn't watched The Sopranos either.
Yeah, it's insane. So like the fact, yeah. So it takes a lot for me to commit to a series, but it started happening during the pandemic where I started getting really into different series. It takes me a very long time. Like I watch like 20 minutes here and 20 minutes there. And so I'm stuck on a Korean series right now, which is also strange. I've never watched Korean dramas in my life and I'm really into one. And so as soon as this is done, which is going to happen in the next 2 days, I'm jumping right into the Jordan stuff. But Sundays have been awful because like everyone is talking. They're like, oh my God, this happened. I'm like, oh, stop.
Do you get the Sunday scaries? Does that happen to you? Is that why it bugs you out?
What are the Sunday scaries?
Sunday scaries is when you have the anxiety of going back to work Monday.
Okay. My wife and
this guy works for himself. He's like, I can't relate.
Yeah. So this is funny. In our household, my wife and my oldest son are the same. They get the Sunday scaries. Their Sunday scaries actually start like Friday night.
Okay.
Friday night, they start going, oh, on Sunday night, I'm going to get the Sunday scaries.
Okay.
But I've never felt that in my life because I've just always loved my work.
Yeah. So
trying to get back into Monday morning. Like my work is my escape from my weekend, which is awful. Like that's such a terrible thing to say.
Well, it's because you love what you do, man.
Yeah, I love it. I like my work is really my escape.
To that point, you brought up the latest collection, I think selling out in 17 minutes or 24 minutes or something like that. Does that ever get old for you? Starting in 2003, does that ever get old? And kind of, did you ever think that decades later, it would still be like that? And what is that feeling for you?
It's insane. It's mind-blowing. It never gets old to Ben and I. We sit every time something sells out, which is now, it used to be once a week because we would do drops once a week. Now we're doing like sometimes two, sometimes three drops a week. We're still on the phone every night till like midnight, just sitting there swiping the Shopify app going like, are you seeing this? Like, how is this possible? Like we were not, like I was saying earlier, we were not supposed to last this long. Streetwear was not supposed to last this long. None of it really makes any sense. Like we're not real polished business people. We never wrote a business plan. We have no idea what we're doing. Every meeting that our staff has that we, you know, get off, like we'll do a crazy Zoom call. Everyone leaves the room. Ben and I look at each other and we're like, what the hell are we doing? We have no idea what we're talking about. Just completely bullshitting all the way through improvising. And so every win is like still feels as much to us as it did day one. Like I'm not exaggerating. It feels, I'm like, why would anyone buy this?
What was your first moment like that? Was it the bandana hoodie?
Yeah, there's a Japanese tattoo artist named Usugro that we were hanging out with, and he's like, let me make a shirt. He made 100 of them and they sold out, and we were like, that's our first hit. And then it was the Paisley hoodies. That was a real big
remember one. Those
what happened there?
Oh, it's such a crazy long story, but all over print was starting to be a thing on the horizon for streetwear. And all props to Maharishi with Camo and what Nigo was doing with Bape. Like, I gotta, you know, say what it is. Our brands at that time, we didn't have cut and sew capabilities. We were all just small guys in garages that had access to a screen print shop. And we're like, how do you do all over print? That seems to be what separates the men from the boys. We can do a graphic right here, but how do you run over the seams? Oh, you got to cut and sew the shirt actually together to do that. Only brands like Bape, only brands like Maharishi can do that. And then we found there was an all over print machine. There was like two of them in Southern California that were operating at the time. Mm-hmm. And
this is like 2005, 2006.
Yeah. This is like 2005, 2006. And every 10 years, all over print comes back. At that time, maybe now it's the cycles happen faster. So let's say it's every 4 years, 5 years. And so we went to this shop and the guy was just like, you guys, every 4 or 5 years, you come back, you want me to dust off this old machine, I'll do it. And it was a belt printing machine that will just run over the seams. Mm-hmm. And so we were like, well, what design are we going to do? I wanted to do something that resembled a bandana. I was just like, they're called Buta droplets, those little droplets on a Paisley print. I was like, I'm just going to throw those all over. And we made the hoodies. We only made, I forget the number, not a lot. And they were really shitty. Like, if you actually looked at them up close, because the paint would pool around the seams, collect. Just not a really nicely finished job, but we didn't care and our customers didn't care. So we make these hoodies. I bring them back to our office, which was where the shop eventually ended up being. That afternoon, Nick Diamond was hanging out. Mega, he hadn't started Black Scale yet. Mega was there. Aaron Pepper, rest in peace, one of our homeboys from back in the day. And then I went inside. There was no social media. I went on the blog and I took photos. I uploaded them to the blog and I said, hey, these hoodies are going to drop tonight. And looked like that at the time was such a crazy way of going about doing business. Like, that was an actual drop. It was hyped up. You know, people were literally logging to thehundreds.com multiple times a day to see what was happening because I was broadcasting from the street. So I said, these are going to drop tonight. And I went home. I built a PayPal shopping cart, which in those days, there really was not a proper way to set a limit. Mm-hmm. It just kind of would keep going, like money would just keep coming in. And I finished the site at like 2 a.m, said, hey, these hoodies are now available. I went to bed. I turned my phone off because I just assumed that Ben was going to call me early in the morning and tell me what happened. I was like, I just need to sleep. It's like 2 or 3 a.m. How many could we actually sell? Like, maybe we'll sell 20. They were expensive. I think they were like $150, which again, in those years was like, it'd be like $300 today.
Right.
And so they go up for sale. And then the next morning at like, it must've been like 8. My girlfriend, who's now my wife, was on her way to work. She stopped by the apartment. She's banging on the door. And I wake up and I'm like, whoa, what's going on? Did I not pay my rent? Is it my landlord? And I run to my door and she's standing there and she's like freaking out. She's like, turn off the website. And I'm like, what? And she's like, why is your phone off? Ben's been trying to call you. He's been calling me. I had to get here. Turn off the website. You guys completely oversold. And I was like, how much did we sell? And go to the website. We sold, it was over 100,000 because we had to get back a lot, which again, at the time, there was no streetwear, there was none of this, there's no drops or anything. Yeah. So in a night, within hours, like selling hundreds of thousands of dollars of a hoodie that we really didn't have. And also during that time, we were like, we're not going to make more. Everyone's like, just fill the orders. We're like, no, we're going to teach you a lesson. Like, you didn't, you know, like the streetwear was all about teaching people lessons at the time. Like, you didn't get it. You didn't get it. And so Ben called me. He's just like, dude, get to the office, which became our store. We show up at the office and he's like, oh my God, what do we do with all this money? We're freaking out. And he's just like, first, we have to give half of this money back. But the money that we do have, he's like, let's build a store right here. Like right where we were talking from. He's like, I was like, the office? He's like, everyone knows we're here. This is where people come out. It's a clubhouse. This is where Fairfax is happening. Like, we'll build our neighborhood here. And I was like, all right. So we dumped 100 grand. No one saw it coming. And so we put a big drape in front of the store and it just looked like it was under construction. I think a couple months later, we just took the drape off and it was just glowing. It's black, custom cabinetry with art installation inside, the photo booth built into the wall. And people were like, whoa, you take a photo on there and uploads to the website. I can be on the website too. That was like a significant turning point. It was an inflection point for the brand, for us too, because we were like, we're real. Like, we're a real company now.
In 2008, you launched a footwear line.
Yes.
What was the most challenging part and what was the most fulfilling part of like designing sneakers?
Designing sneakers, like all props to people who actually work within that space and have that talent and skill. It's a different animal than designing a t-shirt, which is a different animal from designing cut and sew. And I know how to do those things well enough. But when it comes to designing sneakers, I have still so much to learn. And even like throughout the Puma project, I was just sitting there soaking in the knowledge from the Puma team. So when we launched our footwear brand, it took us 4 or 5 years just to get it right to the point where we felt like, okay, we now have a last that looks good to us. It, you know, the flex of the shoe, like the materials, like I understood the nuances of when you use this material versus like if it's a canvas versus a nubuck and like how that changes the shape of a shoe. If you draw this line, like literally millimeters of a line can make a shoe feel awkward, fat, clumsy, or it could feel like sleek and feminine. It's just really cool. It's more about product design. But it took us years. Actually, by the time we figured out the best version or rendition of those shoes, we deaded the entire program. We're like, dude, we finally got here and we're ending it. But
what's the feeling that you get, though, when you put on the shoes that you designed for the first time? Like, are you like a kid or?
I love it. Yeah. Same with our clothes too. Like it's just, especially if it's a shoe that we get to work on that I grew up with. Like when we worked with Reebok, I did this so much of the brand, like this is so narcissistic, selfish, but so much of the brand is me trying to relive my childhood, right? Like, sorry to my customers, but I'm really forcing you to live through my childhood over and over again. And the Reebok Pump collab that we did was a cross trainer that when I was growing up, there was one kid in my class, his name was Peter, and he had them and they were just so cool. They were a mid, they weren't a high or a low, and usually mids are gross, but that was like a good mid. And the colors of it were aqua, black, and white. And I always wanted that shoe, but my parents wouldn't buy me shoes like that growing up. I shopped at the swap meet, which is why I love Chucks so much. I bought Chucks from the swap meet. They were $25. And so I was like, I always want this shoe and I want this shoe. And Reebok was like, hey, we had done a bunch of shoes with Reebok. And they were like, do you want to do Pump? And I'm like, only if we do this Pump. And so putting those shoes on for the first time, I was like, yeah, dude, life comes full circle. It's just like a feather in the cap. For me, it's just like a personal win where no one else really cares. But for me, it's a big deal.
Speaking of feather in the cap, shout out to Peter. But one of the hundreds items I always missed buying was the Peter Pan collaboration, the green one with the feather on the side.
It was felt, that hat. So there was, it was part of the Lost Boys project, the Disney collab, which is, I can do an hour's worth of stories just around that Disney collab and what that did to Disney, what it did to licensing, what it did for us. But part of that collab, which, yeah, a lot of people forget, they remember the shirts because Kanye blogged about it and he only really talked the shirts, but there was two hats. One was Hook's hat, which was like a black felt with like his crossbones, skull crossbones. And then there was the Peter Pan hat, which was a green felt with like the orange feather. And we only made, I think, 100 of each of those hats. Those hats actually sold out before the shirts. They sold out within minutes. And it's very rare. Like people rarely pull them up. Like I never see them. People pull up the Lost Boys stuff all the time. They're like, oh, remember this shirt? There was also a women's brand we had at the time called Tens. And for Tens, we made a Tinkerbell shirt. So there's actually, that's just as rare as the hats.
It's a perfect full circle moment too, because we were talking about Welty's Disneyland trip before you got on the call here, Bobby.
When'd you go to Disneyland?
It was for the Vans collaboration, like Vans Disney. Speaking of those pop culture collaborations though, like you said, you were like kind of like the pioneer of doing that to a certain extent, I'd like to say.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of just like the norm for sportswear brands, streetwear brands, the kind of
like licensing projects. Yeah.
Like you see like Puma collaborates with Barbie, you know, stuff on that.
Yeah.
Do you ever think that it would take off to that degree?
No. Streetwear comes from a place of organic collaborations, right? An artist that's working with another artist. Like when I don't know, back in the day it would have been like Futuro working with Supreme or Stash working with Bape. Like, these are artists, people who actually hang out amongst themselves. I'm assuming a lot of their contracts were done on cocktail napkins. And so the idea of doing a licensing project was a big no-no, especially when we were starting, when I started floating out the idea that we were working with Disney, there was a lot of resistance from our customer base and just from the streetwear market in general. They're like, yo, that's corny. You're selling out. That's a big company. It's a corporation. Like, you guys shouldn't be supporting them, which is strange to think about today, but that was the spirit back then. It was so independent and people were not down with it. And so even from the corporate side, from Disney side too, they did not appreciate what smaller brands, streetwear brands, young artists could do for their brand. They were used to these huge licensing deals. Like, mm-hmm. we're going to put Mickey Mouse clothes in Macy's. Like, everyone makes a ton of money. It's not about credibility or building culture or cool or any of that stuff. And when we started working, they worked with us because I kept ripping them off. Like, I would do a Mickey, I remember this Mickey Mouse shirt where he's wearing Dunks, and it was called Mousey, and on the back it had like the Disney logo, but it was LA. And they came and visited our booth at Magic and were like, we're going to sue you guys. Stop.
Wow.
Yeah, they were like,
you really Bob Iger pulled up on you?
Yeah. Yeah, Bob Iger like, who's in charge? but they were like, you have to stop. We're going to sue you, or we can do this the right way. And I was like, what's the right way? And they're like, well, it's just done through licensing. And I was just like, okay, I'm not really interested because I like collaborating. Like, I need to actually work with you. I don't want to just take something from your toolkit and then transport it onto a shirt and that's it. It's like, I want to actually write the hundreds in the Disney font. I want mm-hmm. the guys, the characters to be wearing our logos and mascots, which is, if you know about this stuff, it's a crazy, like, anytime you see logos merge, you know, properties like on the same plane, like, that's a huge win. Like, that's an actual collaboration.
Like you with Pepsi, right?
Yes, exactly. So there's a difference between collaborations, like true collaborations, and licensing projects. And that was, they allowed us, there was a guy that was working there at the time. I'm not going to put him on blast, but he helped us get a lot of this stuff done under the radar. And Disney was used to such big projects, they weren't paying attention. And we got the hundreds in the Disney font. It just says, and under it says Disney, just with a copyright, which they'll never allow again. The characters are wearing our logos, a bunch of things. We broke all the rules. As the story goes, like, it all sold out. We weren't allowed back on Disney's campus for years. When we did go back, I think like 6 years later.
Just like Wealthy kicked out of Disneyland.
We sat down, they were like, you guys, did you know that we rewrote the entire licensing program because of that Hundreds project? After that, they were like, no one ever gets to write their name in the Disney font. You never really? Get to write just Disney. But it, so it set the tone for a lot of licensing. And that's still why you don't see a lot of Disney projects. We work a lot with Warner Brothers, Universal, DreamWorks, like, as far as studios go. You don't see a lot of Disney stuff because...
I know you still got the passes. You stay at the Star Wars park, Bobby.
I've been there a couple times, but I haven't rode the new one. I was there opening weekend for the Star Wars land. It was awesome.
Bobby, I don't know, Kanye just came up, but I remember 2008. I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, were you at the Casio G-Shock party?
Yes.
And like you were like full blogging Bobby.
Yes.
And I think you got like, did you get like the only footage or something? I remember, because I was in the crowd with you. First of all, it was young in my career. And I'm like, Noah was with me, I think.
Oh God.
This is in New York?
Yes.
In New York, Casio, yeah. 25th anniversary. I just remember being like, holy shit, I've made it. I am at like an exclusive like Kanye West G-Shock performance. And I was like, Bobby Hundreds is right behind me. And then this was peak Bobby Hundreds blog era. Yeah. You had like the first footage. Yeah. Do you remember that?
Yeah. I remember that. So I felt the same way. We were in New York. I think we actually weren't flown out there, but I think we may have gone out there for that party.
Okay.
Because we were invited to a party and it was a big deal. And I don't think maybe they had announced Kanye, but maybe it was a surprise. Everyone's like, maybe Kanye is coming. Mm-hmm. And that was like a different Kanye too. And Ben and I were just excited. We probably put on some cool Dunks, you know? Anyway, so we walk into the building and I remember seeing Leah. And Leah and I were friends at that point, but still like, and still to this.
Married to the mob,
I still revere Leah. So I was just like, oh my God, Leah's here. And I turn around, it's Ricky Powell. And yeah. I was like, yo, you're Ricky Powell. He's like, I'm Ricky Powell. And I'm like, but you're Ricky Powell. This is a big deal for me. And then everyone's like, dude, go upstairs. Like, you know, Kanye's performing. And so back then, Bloggy Bobby, you know, pre-social media. So no one's taking photos. Like, no one cares. There's no cameras on phones or anything like that. Not good ones anyways. And so I somehow would always finagle in an SLR or DSLR wherever I went. Mm-hmm. Like, I would just say, I'm part of the press, or this is my company. Or I would literally like just hop a fence somewhere and get in, take a photo. They'd be like, no photos. I'm like, sorry. And then walk in and I would have a photo and put it on.
Yeah.
That was the game back then. It was like such a rush. And Kanye came out and did his whole, God, man.
Didn't he have the naked girls on
stage?
Yes,
he did.
Yeah.
He did. That's right. God. So I know this is such a weird.
No, go ahead.
It's such a weird thing to think about that there was a time like that. Just seems like another lifetime, another reality.
And I remember you guys had the first footage, and I think did they like come after you to take it down, the label or something, or no?
Probably, because every big thing I ever got, I'd always get sued. Or
really,
I think I went to like an Alien Workshop skate premiere. I posted like Heath Kurchart's last clip, you know, like Alien Workshop took our YouTube page down, which we still suffer for. Just, yeah, every time. I had like a pass to Shia Day through another friend of mine, I won't say, and like I took photos of all of Shia Day, posted it on the blog, and then within like 6 hours, they were like, you have to take this down. Like, no one's ever seen the inside of this place.
Yeah.
But that was the game back then, and everyone loved it. You know, they knew, like, it was, as much as it was like access for me and the brand, really what I was doing, and I'm still doing that today, it's like I was holding your hand going like, this is fun for me too. Like, let's go together. I want you to see this. That's what I was doing that night at the G-Shock party. I was just, you know, I felt like just a kid. So I was like, hey, like, we're all in this together. Let's go. Let's go. Like, see this, Kanye. This is crazy. I know. This is insane. And so, we've always carried that spirit with the brand. It's that, this is exciting for us. It's still exciting for me when something sells out. We do shoot Project Puma. I'm like genuinely like, dude, this is a win for us all. Like, this is what it feels like. I'm going to tell you what it feels like. But back then, we were young.
Do you ever interact with Kanye on Fairfax? Did he ever come in or anything like that? Did you ever see any, like, the thing about Kanye is he's always around doing projects. And I feel like everyone in the industry has kind of like came in contact with him. Do you have any interactions with him?
No. I've never met Kanye. I don't think Ben has ever met him. Obviously, we have mutual friends, and sometimes they ask for, he wants something, and then we give it to him. I think the last time that happened, which was a while ago, was we did a collaboration with Bromance Records and with Brodinski and those guys, and he wanted the hoodie, and so he wore it to the one Louis Vuitton had like a show here in the desert or something. Like, he wore it to that. But, you know, that's cool. I have many thoughts about Kanye.
Yeah,
we all do.
Yeah, definitely. For another day. Sure. Well, we know time is limited. We want to thank you so much. Are the Pumas staggered release or what?
This collection of these four shoes with their corresponding outfits, and there's a pair of slides as well. They're out now. Like, they all kind of dropped at the same time. And this fall, there's going to be four more shoes, four different shoes and four different outfits. And that's more of a collection about sustainability and what it means to make less wasteful clothing.
Awesome. Can't thank you enough, Bobby. Hopefully next time we see each other, we're at the Serving Spoon in LA, and we're talking about this crazy time, looking back at this and how we came out of it. But like I said, that 2008 party with Kanye and the Casio G-Shock, I remember being like, dude, Bobby Hundreds is right behind me. So it's true. Always great talking to you, and we can't thank you enough for being on the pod.
Thanks, guys.
We really appreciate it, Bobby. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely great.
Stay safe, okay?
All right. You too, guys.
Our producer is Shiva Bayet. Sound engineering done by Kyle Garvey. Special thanks to Dave Matthews and Jennifer Stewart. The Complex Sneakers Podcast is part of the Complex Podcast Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.